Welcome to Sidetrack, AM580's monthly features magazine. I'm your host, Jason Croft. On this month's program, we find out what it takes to make a good, kitschy Christmas with the author of a new book titled Kitchmasland. We check in with Urbana's new low-power FM radio station, WRFU, and we have a live in-studio performance with the bossa nova group Desafinado. All that and more, this time on Sidetrack. Shuffleboard and bingo just don't cut it anymore at one Rockford retirement home. Some of the residents have followed their muse to the stage. Chris Lehman explains.
Joan E. Cole has been involved in theater for almost 60 years. She's directed, produced, and acted since she was a very young child. Now Cole is a senior citizen. She turned 65 last December. And she's noticed that as she's grown older, theater roles for people her age become few and far between. So she looked into a growing movement called Senior Theater, and she liked what she found. So much so that she decided to pursue a doctorate in the subject. Cole says senior theater is about giving older people dignity, honor, and respect.
Seniors are saying, we don't want another play that's set in a nursing home. We don't want another play that deals with identity theft. We don't want another play that deals with making sure I take my medications. We really want plays that deal with issues that we face in our lives, like how do I avoid a feeling of loneliness and feeling isolated? What do I do if I start dating somebody again? And how do I tell my family that I'm going to remarry?
Cole has started a senior theater group in Rockford. She calls it Agequake Theater. The group rehearses at Wesley Willow's retirement community, where many of its members live. Group members range in age from their late 50s to their mid-90s. Cole says the general rule for senior theater is that it's open to anyone over the age of 55.
You don't have to have complete vision. You don't have to have complete mobility. Whatever your challenges may be, we will find ways to work around those.
Senior theater groups also have to be flexible when certain members grow ill or pass away. Sometimes an actor simply forgets to show up. Cole says the old theater adage holds true. The show must go on.
When you're planning these performances, you build in ways to have somebody else step in or ways to deal with somebody's absence.
Okay, so let's just try just the lines without any of the action yet, okay?
Kids.
My kids.
Your kids.
Our kids.
Our kids.
Okay. Senior theater productions are usually shorter than a typical play. Many are performed with the actors holding the script in their hand. Some senior theater productions feature what's called life writing. That's where members of the theater group write their own monologues based on personal experiences.
Throughout the years, my mother would send newspaper clippings, letters, but most of all recipe cards. When I was in my 20s, sometimes they irritated me and made me think, for Pete's sake, doesn't she think I can do anything? But thank heavens I saved them. And I still have them. They are like instruction cards from my mother in heaven. Heavenly recipes. Here's one of my favorites. As you see, she did.
That's Jane Baxter of Rockton. She says joining a theater group is something she's wanted to do for a long time.
I love the practicing. I love the group. And I do love being in front of an audience, something I've always wanted and now I can have because of this Agequake Theater. And I'm loving it. I really am.
What do you love most about it?
The applause. Also, I love having my daughter and my grandchildren see another side of me that they didn't know was there.
One of Baxter's theater mates is old enough to be her father. Hank Schaller is 92 years old and spent most of his life in Chicago. After retiring in Rockford, Schaller had a minor stroke and now he says he's trying to keep himself busy.
I was in business for over 35 years in Chicago. I liked it thoroughly. I like people. I hope to conquer some of my fears now in here, which are established by not working.
Senior theater is expanding in the United States. Bonnie Vorenberg of the Senior Theater League of America says there are at least 638 senior theater companies across the country. That's up from just 79 6 years ago. Vorenberg says there are both professional and amateur theater companies. H-Quake Theater in Rockford is one of the amateur companies, but Joan Cole says it's still important to maintain high artistic standards.
If you're going to charge somebody to come and see a play, you have to provide a product that's worth the money. And that's a real issue right now in terms of senior theater, that there are some productions that are done for any number of reasons, but for those productions that are charging admission, they have to present, I believe, a quality product.
Oh, what's the matter with kids? What's the matter with kids?
Everyone?
What's the matter with kids today?
Okay, very good. Now let's go back and put in some of the basic action that we
Cole did. Says H-Quake Theater is getting there when it comes to presenting a quality product. Her goal right now is to prepare the group to enter next fall's Senior Theater League of America Festival in St. Louis. I'm Chris Lehman.
Got attuned to Sidetrack. The holidays for many means decking the halls with all sorts of Christmas paraphernalia. It's all about the brand new fiber optic tree and mechanical reindeers in the yard. For some, Christmas means aluminum trees and color wheels from the 1950s. Travis Smith has recently authored a book that deals with all sorts of retro holiday items. It's called Kitchmasland, Christmas decor from the 1950s to the 1970s. It's published by Schiffer. It's a collection of all those wonderfully tacky Christmas items from years past. I talked with Smith recently and asked him first, what makes for good Christmas kitsch?
Oh, well, obviously, the quintessential Kitchmas item is the aluminum Christmas tree from the 50s and 60s with the, you know, the color wheel placed on the floor, shooting up and changing that tree into colors. Another good Christmas kitsch item would be, you know, the shiny bright ornaments that we had as kids, and, you know, the styrofoam Santa faces that everybody had on their front door. Those are good examples of Kitchmas.
But, I mean, what in particular with the item makes it kitschy?
Well, I think that there's sort of an ironic feel to the way items were designed back in the 50s and 60s that we perceive as kitsch now. And it's something that they're trying to reproduce today, but they don't quite get it. And I think the reason why is that to be really good kitsch, it has to be vintage. Today's kitsch doesn't quite do it because we know that they're already trying too hard. We're already on to them. So, but we can look back at the designs from our past and appreciate them for what they were attempting to do back then with design, and I think that's what makes something kitsch.
Well, when these things were originally designed, they were designed in all honesty and sincerity.
Absolutely.
And nowadays, the reproductions all have this wink and a nod to them.
Yeah, they're a little false. And you're exactly right. You know, we back in the 50s and 60s and 70s, you'd walk into a Sears or Montgomery Ward's holiday department, and those aluminum trees that were rotating on display, they were not considered kitsch at that time. They were considered very modern and new and exciting.
So you talked about the aluminum trees, of course, the archetypal kitschy item from the 1950s, Christmas-wise. 1960s, what's the archetypal item?
I think it probably turned into like colored foil trees. You had pink and turquoise and green and gold foil trees were still being marketed as modern. And then towards the late 60s and getting into the 70s, there was this return to nostalgia and kind of earthy, like kind of an earthy hippie kind of thing. So you saw Christmas decor become more natural, and people were making ornaments at home, and it was becoming more crafty.
What is it about Christmas in particular that makes that holiday so ripe for kitschiness?
Well, I think the main reason is that almost everybody decorates for Christmas. If you never decorate at all throughout the year, almost everybody at that time of year does something, you know, with their home or on their desk at their office. You know, it could be as simply as just, you know, putting up a little tabletop tree. But I think it's the one time of the year where almost everybody does something kind of creative where they normally wouldn't. And I think that's why it kind of lends itself to kitsch, even today.
And there's so much marketed for Christmas.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Still today, it's almost insane, but there's just so much out there to be used for Christmas decorations.
Absolutely, and it's become a year-round business. I mean, you know, Christmas people are almost like this cult. They love it so much, and they buy it year-round. And, you know, there are stores all around the country that are open all year-round selling Christmas stuff.
What other things are sought after now when it comes to this idea of Christmas kitsch?
I think the lawn and yard decorations from the retro periods are very sought after. Things that are homemade, that take on a one-of-a-kind look and feel, you know, plywood, Santa and sleigh, you know, life-size creations that people made, you know, in their garage at home and were made for outdoors in the yard. Those things are quite popular. And like I said, you know, everybody works so hard these days. Nobody has time to make crafts like they used to. So I think that's one of the reasons why yesterday's, you know, do-it-yourself craft items are so popular today, because nobody has time to do it yourself, so let's buy the vintage version that somebody lovingly handcrafted at home back then. I think that there are certain blown glass ornaments that are quite popular, usually the European versions that are known as like Polish indent, which were obviously from Poland, and blown glass, very ornate, indented, usually really wild colors, you know, beautiful colorations that were unusual at the time when they came out. They weren't your standard, you know, red, gold, and silver. They were getting into aquas and pinks and just really wild color combinations. I think those are very popular. I think anything that's real atomic looking, which was popular in the 50s, was this kind of Sputnik imagery and designs. I think those are really popular with mid-century modern collectors. In fact, there is an ornament. It's referred to as a Sputnik. It was plastic, and that's exactly what it looks like. And those go for some big bucks in store, in vintage stores and on eBay.
Well, if people want to learn more about your book, Kitchmas Land, and see more of the designs that we're talking about in these special Christmas items, where can they go to?
They can go to the website, which is kitchmasland.com. There's a sneak peek of the book on the site. They can order the book through the site. There's merchandise on the site for sale that's actually been featured in the book.
Well, Travis Smith, thanks for joining us, and thanks for talking with us about Kitchmas Land stuff.
And thank you for having me on, Jason. It was a lot of fun.
This is Sidetrack. Urbana has a new FM radio station, but at 100 watts, it's not going to be able to compete with all the other commercial radio stations in the market, and that's okay. WRFU is a non-commercial community radio station that gives people who don't necessarily want to have a career in radio a chance to play their music and have their voices heard. It was a project 6 years in the making. Jeff Bossert takes us on a tour of the studios of WRFU.
Drop by the downtown Urbana post office these days and you'll see live radio hosts sharing their views and spinning tunes. The Independent Media Center purchased the building in May, and one of the big reasons was to make a home for its new station.
But this is where all of the magic takes place that you will be doing. How many here have had any experience on radio before?
By design, the staff at WRFU doesn't have a chain of command. But right now, the task of training comes down to John Anderson, who's showing some volunteers the everyday equipment.
This is the most intimidating piece of equipment, partially because it's where everything actually goes down and where what your listeners hear is.
Things are very basic in the station's third week on the air. All the equipment sits on plywood. A tiny single speaker lets the on-air staff know what's being broadcast. The shelves reserved for the CD library are anything but full, and the lack of DJs forces the station to broadcast much of its day on autopilot. For the most part, that DJ is a computer randomly playing songs from the station's library. Anderson is a kind of old pro in low-power radio and college radio. John says when he's not at the station, he tunes in regularly, but not necessarily to check up on anyone.
I listen a lot when I'm at home, but that's because I'm interested in hearing what people are doing. It's a lot of work, and it's very tenuous still. I mean, getting on the air is just the beginning of any sort of radio station project.
Anderson has trained over 70 volunteers thus far, and more people are peering through the window, interested in what's going on in that tiny booth, like a recent group of U of I students.
One of them goes and grabs a piece of paper off a little front table we have where we keep promotional literature. And then he grabbed a pen, and I saw him scribbling something, and then he walks up to our big studio window and holds this piece of paper up to the wall. It says, "We need a show." So, I mean, people are coming out of the woodwork now that the station is on the air.
Staff at WRFU say they take pride in the fact that the station's content is almost entirely up to its volunteers.
It's less to do about a particular voice than it is about opening up to a wide range of voices.
Mike Lehman is an activist with the Socialist Forum, a local organization that works with labor and social justice groups. He filed the application to make WRFU a reality.
I would like to think it's and I think it is, a very open format that allows a wide-ranging group of voices to be on the air. So that's sort of what the kicker was there.
In 2000, Lehman met with members of the Prometheus Radio Project, a Philadelphia-based group that lobbies the FCC on behalf of low-power radio. Hannah Sassaman is an organizer with the group.
Prometheus is really all about demystifying technology, teaching anyone from a 7-year-old to a 70-year-old that a soldering iron is easy to use and not terrifying, and you can cable up and solder up a studio, you can raise a tower, you can train yourself and train your friends and neighbors on how to run a radio program.
The actual putting together of the station, or barn raising, took place over a long weekend in mid-November. Members of Prometheus came to Urbana to assure that all the wires were hooked up. The WRFU Brain Trust saw it only fitting that Lehman, the man with the original vision, was the first at the mic. The first sound heard by listeners of 104.5, a music box. The reason for the music, the Internationale, is an old socialist hymn, and Lehman's Socialist Forum encourages a variety of views and voices on the air. He followed that up with a Steve Earle song.
Welcome to Radio Free Urbana.
WRFU held a lot of fundraisers prior to going on the air, but unlike the other community station in town, WEFT, staff at RFU, or Radio Free Urbana, hope to avoid holding on-air fundraisers and get their money slowly through member dues. Visit the station's website at WRFU.net, and you'll see a lot of time slots marked Your Show Here. New recruits like Virginia Steffen hope that changes quickly. She'll be co-hosting a local music and arts show.
I guess our goal is just to make it as professional as possible and it be something that is known throughout the community. We plan on doing quite a bit of advertising and such so that, you know, people become interested and want to be on our show and look to our show as a resource for finding out what's going on.
John Anderson says filling up the WRFU schedule with such enthusiastic voices would be great, but he's more excited with the fact that others realize they have the ability to flip on a mic and talk to people.
Amateurs tend to make a lot of common mistakes, so you hear similar mistakes and things like that on the air, and that's all fine. It's part of the learning process. I mean, I kind of take a little bit of pleasure out of listening to somebody screw up, too, because I know what it's like, and I know what they're going through, and it makes me feel good to know that they're working through the process and having a good time at it.
I'm Jeff Bossert.
Joining me in the studio now is the Bossa Nova group, Desafinado. We'll learn more about them in just a minute, but first, a song. So here's Desafinado live on Sidetrack.
O pato vinha cantando alegremente, quen, quen, quando o marreco sorridente pediu para entrar também no samba, no samba, no samba. O ganso gostou da dupla e fez também quen, quen, quen. Olhou pro cisne e disse assim: vem, vem, que o quarteto ficará bem, muito bom, muito bem. Na beira da lagoa foram ensaiar para começar o tico-tico no fubá. A voz do pato era mesmo um desacato, jogo de cena com o ganso era mato. Mas eu gostei. Alegremente, quen, quen, quando o marreco sorridente pediu para entrar também no samba, no samba, no samba. O ganso gostou da dupla e fez também quen, quen, quen. Olhou pro cisne e disse assim: vem, vem, que o quarteto ficará bem.
The band Desafinado here in the WILL studios. So, hello everyone. Why don't you introduce yourselves and tell us what you play in the band so we can get an idea of who you are. We'll start over here.
I'm Tim Johnson. I play guitar and sing.
I'm Geraldo Rosales and I play congas.
Hi everyone. Chad Dunn, percussion.
Tom Painter, flute and melodica.
I'm Greg Jael. I play guitar and I sing.
I'm Connie Johnson, and I play the vibraphone.
I'm Simone da Silva, and I sing.
So tell us about the song we just heard. What was the name? O Pato?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, O Pato. O Pato is one of the standard bossa nova tunes in the, what you would consider the bossa nova songbook. It was recorded in the late 50s and was a really big hit for João Gilberto, who was the guitar player that played it. And actually was such a big hit at the time when they were broadcasting it on the radio, they would have contests to have people call in. And if you could play and sing the song the way that João Gilberto was singing and playing it, you would win a copy of his record. And of course, nobody could because he's João Gilberto and nobody can sing and play like him.
So tell us how you guys got together, because to me, the Midwest, this part of, you know, Illinois, this part of country is very far away from Brazil. It seems like an odd place for this type of music. How did you guys get together?
Well, we originally started out, was Greg and myself, and we got together and we started gravitating more and more towards the Brazilian music mm-hmm. until we finally, that's all we were doing. And that was about four years ago. Mm-hmm. And then the group grew and grew until now we're a seven-piece, and we've been that way for at least 2-3 years, I think, something like that. And it's been very enjoyable.
So what is it about bossa nova music that draws you to it individually and, I guess, as a collective?
Well, for myself, I first came to know this music as a jazz musician, just playing and improvising on the tunes, not knowing anything about Portuguese language or the original lyrics or the history of it, just because these tunes had become jazz standards. They're in the real book, a lot of them. But then I lived in Portugal for 2 years and learned Portuguese and started to come at the music from the other side of understanding the words and going back to the original versions and starting to learn about the history of when the songs were written and how the style came about. And I discovered a whole world I didn't even know about, and I found the music to be very compelling.
Well, let's also hear from the singer of the group, mm-hmm. Simone.
Yeah, the funniest thing is that I really started to like and to listen and to learn more about bossa nova the first time that I lived in the States when I was 17. Because, I mean, even though I heard, I started to love because it talks about not only Brazil, but it's kind of a feeling that transpasses, you know, nationalities. And here people love it because they, even though sometimes they cannot understand the lyrics, they just get into that mood, you know, that freshness, that dreamlike ambience.
Now, were you born in Brazil?
Yeah, I'm Brazilian.
So you have this sort of basic part of your makeup is this sort of music.
Yeah.
Well, let's hear another song from you guys. I see Chad is bringing out a rather odd bow-looking instrument.
Yeah,
I'm sure that has something to do with this next song.
Yeah, it's the beating bow is the instrument, and that's also the name of the tune.
All right, well, why don't we hear this, and then we'll find out more about that in a bit. Here's the band Desafinado live in the studio here on Sidetrack. Thank you. Ah, yes. The Birimbau.
Mm-hmm.
This is Sidetrack. You're listening to Sidetrack, and the band is Decifinato, and they have joined us here in Studio F for a few songs and to talk with us a bit. Explain the Birimbau for us.
I would love to. The Birimbau is a musical bow that has a metal string that attaches to one to both ends of the piece of wood, and there's an arc to it. In addition to that, there is a hollowed-out gourd that slides onto the bottom of it. So that's where the majority of the sound is coming from. That's the amplifier, basically. And you strike the metal string with a baqueta, which is a stick, a thin stick. You also are wearing on your hand a kashishi, which is a small shaker. And you hold a stone in the other hand. It's one of those instruments that it's kind of like standing on one foot, patting your head, chewing gum, and rubbing your stomach. Did I already say that already? And playing at the same time while doing the alphabet. So you have all these elements. And essentially, it's a single-string guitar, and it's deceptive because there are some masters that play this instrument that are absolutely incredible and can do great things with it. And the Birimbau was used – it's the instrument to help me out.
Capoeira.
It's for capoeira, but it was one of the primary instruments to tell the people who are practicing capoeira what movements to play in, because capoeira was used as a form, as a Brazilian martial arts dance to prepare the slaves for their revolt against slave owners. So you had this musical instrument and people practicing capoeira. Now, the Birimbau is taken off into other areas. It's being used for popular music as a novelty type of instrument to use in all genres. You know, I hear it in rock, I hear it in heavy metal, and not just Brazilian styles, but in American versions also.
It's an amazing instrument, and it sounds so natural within the combination of instruments that you all bring together for this sound.
Mm.
It's very interesting. Now, Simone, you were mentioning this, you were hinting on this when you were talking about discovering this music again. To me, there's always this very bittersweet quality to bossa nova music. There is this intense passion and intense longing, but there's also this sense of sadness and disappointment. And I'm thinking back, of course, to the sort of archetypal girl from Ipanema, mm-hmm. you know, where he wants her, he longs for her, but she doesn't even know he
yeah,
exists.
She just passes by.
He just passes
and
by.
And smiles.
So, you know, why do you think the music is the way it is, this quality, this bittersweet quality? And why does that appeal to people?
I think it mixes up both things. Like, some songs talk about the love you have and how you are happy because you can enjoy moments with the person that you love. And some songs, they need that longing for something that you don't have. This is how the inspiration comes. And I think it's like that image, it's like a still, you know, photograph, and it's there. And you just picture that thing, and that is the dreamlike quality. You dream about that and you write about that and you get inspired about that. Beautiful women and landscape and the breeze and the sea and things that somehow are related to the tropics, maybe.
Well, I love that image of the still photograph and everything that one photograph can say.
And there is a song also called Fotografia, which is photograph, and another one is black and white photograph.
Mm.
And I think that this idea of like looking at something and longing for that and remembering, you know, moments, it's part of this whole bossa nova feeling.
And you guys bring that into your original tunes as well. You know, I mean, definitely you have to, I guess it's almost necessary, I guess, to have that quality in your tunes.
Yeah, I think if you study the music and you want to contribute to the style, you'd have to internalize the style, and it's going to affect, you know, how you do things. So there's an original on our CD of mine called Ugatu,
mm-hmm.
and And also we're going to play a tune of mine called Indu.
We're going to get to that song in just a second. So, yeah, why don't you tell us about that one?
Let me just translate the lyrics for you. It's Indu so Indu pra você. Indu means going. And it basically says going toward you, always going toward you, always wounding myself with you. And the next verse is going toward love, always going toward love, always lying or deceiving myself with love. And then the bridge is maybe you'll go with me, maybe you'll go with somebody else or somewhere else. You'll probably dance at the party, you with your mask on. And then the last verse is never going again, never going again. I found my peace, too beautiful. Always going with you, never, is how it ends. So it's
sort of a classic style.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, why don't we hear that right now? The song Indo.
Yeah.
From the band Desafinado, live here on Sidetrack.
Estou indo pra você.
Só indo pra você.
Sempre indo pra você.
Sempre indo pra você.
Lindo, sou lindo com você. Sempre mentindo com você.
Lindo,
lindo, lindo.
I like that one. That's the song Indo, as performed by the band Desafinado, and they are live here in the studio performing for us. You guys do have a CD out, right, Greg?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. That's right. This
your
is
your debut CD.
Yeah, yeah. It's a CD that we recorded in Pogo Studios and released earlier this year, late spring, early summer of 2005, and it's got a number of bossa nova and samba tunes, some of which are well known and some of which aren't so well known, as well as an original which Tim wrote, as he mentioned earlier, called O Gato.
And if people want to find the CD, where can they find it at?
Well, we sell it at all of our shows, so if you come out and see us, you'll be able to purchase one there. You can also buy them at Pages for All Ages in Savoy or Borders in Champaign. And you can check our website. We're in the process of putting them for sale online, so that should be available soon as well. And our website is www.desafinado-music.com. That's all one word, and that's spelled www.desafinado-music.com.
The band Desafinado, thanks a lot for joining us here in the studio.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
And before you pack up the instruments, how about one more song?
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
Okay.
Corcovado?
Let's do Corcovado.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, one more song, and thanks again for joining us here in the studio.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Well, that does it for another edition of Sidetrack. A special thanks go out this month to Brian Paris for all his help engineering the Decifinato in studio. And a special programming note. Next month, Sidetrack will be moving from its longtime Wednesday night slot. Starting in January, Sidetrack will be heard on the first Saturday of each month. Jay Pierce is our senior editor, and I'm your executive producer and host, Jason Croft. This episode, as well as all the past episodes of Sidetrack, are available in real audio on our website. And we've recently started podcasting the show as well. Just go to WILL.UIUC.edu, click Listen, and then select Sidetrack. Sidetrack is a production of AM 580, WILL, Urbana.